and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris. Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. Malaysia's labour system has for decades permitted forced labour practices to become entrenched. Forced labour isn't just about the physical intimidation or restraint of a victim, but it also includes withholding passports, abusive working conditions and living conditions, withholding of wages and even excessive overtime. Now, in late 2001, Malaysia launched our first ever national action plan on forced labour. It was widely lauded as a step towards ending the practices of forced labour in the country. But can we realise these aspirations by 2030? Now, my first guest on the show is Adrian Pereira. He is the Executive Director of North-South Initiative, which is a migrant and refugee rights NGO. Adrian, thank you for joining me on the show today. Malaysia, it seems, keeps repeating this cycle of, you know, a round of recruitment of migrant workers and then undocumented workers build up. And then we have this purge, a crackdown, mass detentions, and then expulsion or back, send them back to their source country. This repeats every few years. The question is, why do we keep falling into this cyclical trap? And Adrian, what has been the repercussions of this very reactive approach to policymaking about migrant workers?
Yeah, so this is the strange thing when it comes to migrant workers, where it's the issue is looked both as a labor supply purpose, and also as a security matter. And because there's two different angles of looking at it in terms of governance, then in the past we have seen two different ministries overlooking one issue, and that has led to certain complications, conflict of interest, and hence the past two ministers have actually proposed that to avoid this confusion and conflict of interest, there should only be one ministry that overlooks labor migration. And it was already in the pipeline and even announced. The strange thing is that the Anwar administration undid years and years of advocacy and streamlining the labor migration processes by, you know, making the Home Affairs Ministry the primary agency that is managing foreign workers. So we have backtracked, and this will surely ensure the cycle of what you mentioned, right, to continue. Yeah.
Okay. So this jurisdictional overlap, as you were saying, between Human Resources Ministry and Home Affairs Ministry, one looks at it from a national security point of view, from an immigration point of view, the other how migrant workers can contribute to the economy. Where do you think the policies pertaining to migrant workers should fall under? I mean, and how do we reconcile these conflicting two interests?
Yeah, so I get this question a lot. Malaysians ask me, why are you not helping Malaysian workers with their rights? And my answer is, labor, there should only be one standard. And when we fight for the rights of migrant workers, it eventually leads to the betterment of everyone's labor rights and standards. So the lack of having a comprehensive national policy on migration seems to be causing all this confusion when it comes to the governance. And even for Malaysian workers, if you dive deep into the various laws that govern the labor of Malaysians itself, it's so segregated, it's so divided and confusing that it makes standard setting enforcement very complicated. And this still today has not been resolved in a holistic manner.
You were saying about how labour practices should be across the board. Are our current laws and policies separated in the sense that it's clearly demarcated what is for local and what is for foreign workers?
Yeah, there are some inequalities when it comes to standard setting. And when, as long as the standards are not equal, that's where certain parties, certain elements will take advantage and continue to perpetrate forced labor. So, for example, you know, our SOCSO law, yeah, it's good that the government introduced SOCSO for migrants, but it's not equal, you know. And you also have so many undesired bureaucratic practices, like, you know, it makes it extremely difficult for the migrant worker to change an employer. And, you know, these are factors that contribute to forced labor, especially when there's a dispute or when there are elements of human trafficking. Yeah.
I want to talk a little bit about the fact that migrant workers are not able to change employers freely. I think that contributes to their vulnerability. They're kind of trapped into this relationship with the current employer who has paid exorbitant fees to get them into the country. Can we talk a little bit about that, how the privatization of immigration services in Malaysia and the involvement of unlicensed labor recruiters, how all of that has contributed to adding to the vulnerability of migrant workers and the exploitation of their work?
Yeah, so if you look at the indicators of forced labor, one of it is debt bondage, and both migrants and employers continue to pay ridiculously high fees to recruit a worker. For example, I had a case at North South Initiative where an employer had to pay 30,000 ringgit for a domestic worker. And if you look at the regular workers in different sectors, it's reaching, almost touching between 15 to 20,000. So, and don't forget, the workers are also paying huge amounts. So what the ILO has said is that, you know, workers shouldn't pay. Nobody should pay for a job. Unfortunately, nobody knows how to enforce this. Nobody knows how to monitor this. Currently, the supply chains are taking the lead in, you know, weeding out this practice. So the government, you know, by now it's supposed to amend the certain laws to prevent workers from paying fees, but I don't see the political will of that happening. Yeah.
Okay. How would you then reset that system? I mean, what is needed if you, because of your work on the ground and you talk to those who have been exploited by the loopholes in the system, Adriel, how would you reset Malaysia's migrant recruitment system?
Yeah, so the governance of and management of labour migration has to be streamlined. The conflict of interest, the actors who are utilizing this to make money has to be totally eliminated from the equation. The proposal that only the Human Resource Ministry manage labor migration in total is vital. And we really hope the Anwar administration will take that seriously. Otherwise, you know, Malaysia stands a chance of, again, falling into forced labor trap and, you know, being scoring a hat trick on the TIP report, being on tier 3 for the third row in a year.
So we are currently two years now at tier 3. Adrian, that we've been discussing this from the policy perspective, which is very important. But what about the practices? Companies, do they need educating as to what constitutes forced labor practices?
Yeah, so in my experience, a lot of the reforms seem to be coming from external factors. So you have the Americans imposing the bans, public service buyers and procurement, you know, stopping our shipments because of forced labor. So it looks that our businesses, whether you're an SME or you're in a supply chain, the CEOs and the shareholders need to play an important role. They need to be educated, and not just educated on the standards, but, you know, be held liable for abusers. And that's not happening at the moment. So sooner or later, the global standards, global laws are going to, you know, take very serious action.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that Malaysia just cannot wait for that, you know, well, and that only decide. Yeah.
Well, right now, it seems that whenever there are cases of forced or reports of forced labour, it's always exposés. It's a whistleblower somewhere, right? Is the biggest issue then the government's lack of resources in monitoring work conditions?
Yeah, so the labour inspectors, I mean, there is a theory that we don't have enough, which could be true. But even if you have 10,000 labour inspectors who are not qualified or don't have the capacity and the competency to weed out forced labour, then, you know, you go back to square one. So that needs to be resolved very urgently. But there is another important actor who, you know, we have not been talking a lot about, which is the workers themselves. So a few years ago, the then minister Kula was proposing that, you know, workers have an automatic inclusion into unions, and that's so important because at the workplace, that's where the abuses happen, and this is where you know, North South Initiative would like to hope that, you know, Malaysian workers and migrant workers work together, form unions, join unions together, get collective agreements with better standards, and, you know, then the sky's the limit. You don't have to just depend on the miserable 1,500 minimum wage. I know workers who, you know, once they're part of collective agreements, including migrants, you then enter the tax deductible bracket. Imagine how amazing that is. So that's the way forward. Trade unionism to monitor and to bring balance to this whole issue.
Adrian, thank you so much for speaking with me today. Adrian Pereira, Executive Director of North South Initiative there. We're going to take a quick break here and consider this. We will be back with more. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. Let's continue our discussion about what it will take to ensure that Malaysia ends the practices of forced labour by 2030. This according to the National Action Plan on Forced Labour. My next guest is Lee Hock An. He is Senior Fellow at the ICS Yusof Ishak Institute in Singapore. He recently co-authored an article titled "Can Malaysia Eliminate Forced Labour by 2030? Hock An, thank you for joining me on the show. You know, year after year, we talk about what is needed to address forced labour in the country. I'm just wondering, in writing this research, this piece of research, have you witnessed or seen things change in tackling this problem?
Hi, Melissa. Thanks so much for having me to talk about this important topic. Well, the inspiration for this study was, you know, to really try to delve deeply into the dynamics of change and where things have actually, you know, progressed, and to try and unpack the realities and some of the nuances. I think we're talking about change across, you know, time, so we have to also put into context where Malaysia has come from, and I think some of the history on this subject. And I think it's well known, but important to state, you know, the problems of the policy indecision and inconsistency of the past and the lack of a comprehensive plan. And so what you had mentioned, the National Action Plan on Forced Labour, right, that's a clear change and a mark of progress. At least there is something that is trying to an integrated approach to a very complex a problem. And there were engagements, tripartite, with employers, trade unions, and governments, you know, and Malaysia's made these commitments to decent work. So that's a clear difference, I think we could say, right, and an important development. There's also been, I think, a lot of problems are rooted, right, in the labor supply industry, a whole industry that is profit-making. And there's been a lot of attention as well, you know, time and again, reports, right, of the kind of abuses that take place, and lack of worker protection. So here, I mean, we can also point out, right, that and to give some acknowledgement to the kind of changes that have taken place. At least formally in terms of regulation and legislation. I mean, there was a formal discontinuation of labor outsourcing licenses, enhancement of worker housing protection, extension of SOXO to migrant workers. So, this should be duly acknowledged. But at the same time, there is research that is showing that, you know, the workers still continue to report, like in surveys, that they are working in for a third party, right? And the problems with the compliance and enforcement of the regulations, you know, are also there's also a lot of they just keep recurring. So there's improvement, right, on formally, but compliance and enforcement, I think that's where there's still a lot of work to do. There's also the international front, right? Malaysia's reputation has really been damaged. There's been the US banning of imports, the trafficking of persons report, and Malaysia's ranking there. And also, I think importantly, the labor source countries have become more assertive, even to the point of embargoing their workers. That's happened with Indonesia, with Nepal putting a halt while compelling Malaysia to renegotiate. So it's an odd situation, right? Malaysia is actually the more advanced country, but it's the less advanced countries that are pushing Malaysia to improve on its standards. But I think that is, you know, that really goes to show, right, that there is this. What's the culmination of this? I think that Malaysia realizes that it's a serious problem. It's gotten it's gotten domestic traction. Its international attention is and mostly negative, casting Malaysia in a negative light. It's not good for the country, and it affects business as well. So the bottom lines, I think all of that has converged to make a bit much more concerted effort recently than we have seen in the past.
Okay, so you were saying there's new urgency in trying to deal with this. When we talk about the domestic, what was driving this, the need to address foreign forced labor, is there enough data for policymakers to really understand the scale of the issue? Do we know exactly how many foreign migrant workers are here legally, illegally, who have been are vulnerable to forced labor practices? Where are they? What sectors are they? What kind of forced labor practices are being forced upon them? Do we have that baseline data?
This is a very important point. I just want to say firstly that the undocumented status is not equated with forced labor. But of course, those who are undocumented are more vulnerable to forced labor situations because they don't have that documentation, at least some kind of that legal protection that they could have or they could access if they were documented. Another point also is that the reasons for becoming undocumented, I just want to make this point briefly, but it's not just about illegal entry to Malaysia, as I, maybe some sometimes it might be cast in that way. And there are workers that may enter like with the permit and the documentation, but then they transit into an undocumented situation. And then that could be for different reasons as well, including escaping a forced labor situation. Mm-hmm. So I think we should have a better handle on the overall numbers. There's still no authoritative account on the total number, which is including the permits and the undocumented. Of course, the permit, is a registry, and that's a number, right, that is not so regularly disclosed, but at least there's a clear, definite figure there. The numbers of undocumented, right, there are varying estimates. And I don't think we can really ever have only one definitive number, but I think we can be more authoritative. We can the government, right, with the information at its disposal, can arrive at more authoritative and reliable estimates. And using various sources, some research has used things like mobile phone lines and so on. So that is one, the overall number, how many and in what sectors and why, and the numbers that are undocumented upon entry, which is more of an issue, I think, in the Sabah and Sarawak, because the borders there are more porous. And this is another domain of the data, I think, that there is, I am sure, more than is being disclosed. The government, mm-hmm. It may not be still complete, you know, but it is something that we would, I think many would like to see that can be shared, and also demonstration that the government's decisions, right, are really informed by the data. I think the transparency, right, and would help would go a long way, so that there can be more public engagement and there can be more accountability as well, so that we, you know, are really having a discussion, all sides, government, employers, workers, civil society, you know, looking at the same set of data, looking at it critically, and then and having discussions that are grounded in this empirical basis.
Right. This is a big question, but with the National Action Plan on Forced Labour, it's a step forward, but where do you see the biggest challenges in achieving that goal of eliminating it by 2030?
Yeah, the labour recruitment regime, I flagged it earlier, and also saying that, you know, there is one of those areas where there's been some formal changes in terms of outsourcing company licenses that were not extended, so they don't exist anymore. And the principle behind this is to move towards direct employment. That is, workers will be working with the employee directly with the employer, and not a labor outsourcing or whatever third party, because it's the third party scenarios, right, where abuses, right, and non-compliances can occur with a bit more impunity. There's this detachment of the employer from responsibility over the worker. You have a factory, right, and the employer, the operator of that factory, does have responsibility over what's happening there. But then if the workers are working effectively for someone else, then where's that line of responsibility? It becomes blurred. So it needs to be, I think, worked on, right, in many ways as well, all the way to the source country and the beginnings of the migration process. I think these are also quite, talked about quite widely. But we, Malaysia, I think, will need to, grapple with that in a way that is really decisive and clear, with a lot of resolve and political will. I think another issue relates to enforcement. The adequacy of agencies that are doing the inspection, and also I think training of officers, right, to be mindful of forced labor, to be mindful of rights, and to see the problem not as one just of security and the reaction to, you know, discovering undocumented workers, for instance, right, is the detention and deportation, you know, and Malaysia has gone through those cycles, and that is very injurious to relations with the labor sending countries. But to have a clearer procedures, right, and protocols to treat with dignity, while of course handling cases, and of course there are many reasons, right, for workers to be in their difficult situations, and different people also would be responsible for that. And I think I think just want to add one thing related to that, which is the decision-making powers that need to reside under the jurisdiction, under the purview of the Ministry of Human Resources. So this is one where we made that point in the paper, and we were saluting and commending the progress that was made in moving the major decision-making away from Ministry of Home Affairs back to Ministry of, Ministry of Human Resources. And we have reacted with dismay to the current government's decision to move it back to the Ministry of Home Affairs. A lot of the problems with this labor supply and the profiteering outsourcing industry, you know, originate when those decisions and the policy was being under the oversight of the Ministry of Home Affairs. The transparency and consistency in bilateral agreements, there's differences, and sometimes the negotiations, right, it's again the country, the sending country, like Indonesia or Nepal, that have assert their workers' rights and want better protections for them. So I mean, it's a good thing. I mean, we would welcome wherever the impetus is coming from. But this has also resulted in some, you know, I think inconsistencies, or we don't have a full picture that the bilateral agreements with the different sending countries, right, that they're being signed or being negotiated, they're not disclosed publicly. So it's also an issue that is difficult to provide that kind of check and balance, because we lack the information. So transparency, so that they can be more standardized, right? Because every worker, regardless what their country of origin, should have the same entitlements and protections if they're in Malaysia.
Thank you, Ho'an, for being on the show tonight. That was my conversation with Lee Ho'an from the ICS Yusof Ishak Institute in Singapore, wrapping up this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris, signing off for the evening. Thank you so much for watching, and good night.